tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 23rd of July, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Yes, it's Thursday once again, which is our geopolitical analysis day. And of course, we do have with us the best geopolitical analyst that we can find, and that is, of course, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I am doing quite well. It is only 66 degrees here in western Pennsylvania. We had this miserable heat wave. I couldn't take it. And now we have something more civilized. And on top of that, we have kind of, you know, we're some of the first or one of the first to start talking about this topic we're going to deal with today, because it really hasn't sunk into the public mind quite yet, at least the public mind that cares about this stuff.
Well, it's certainly an interesting article, and I believe you translated it yourself from the Russian. So if you check the first couple of links, you'll find that they're actually in Russian language. And then later on, and we'll make it clear when we move to the other article, we will be looking at, and again, this is interesting. It's Ukraine.ru. So the RU prefix means that it's from Russia. So it's a Russian website, which is called Ukraine, which reminds me very much of BBC Persia, which is obviously supposed to be like for Iran, but it's actually created by Britain and is actually banned in Iran. So I was sort of wondering whether Ukraine.ru might actually be banned in Ukraine, but it's the same thing. Whichever all these countries around the world do this sort of thing, which is why we try to find sources from different places, and we tell you who the sources are, and we even use left-wing sources as well sometimes, because we want to try and get to the truth of what we're talking about. So today we're going to be talking about President Zelensky moving the deck chairs on the Titanic once again and appointing a new commander-in-chief. General Mykhailo Drapaty, born 1982 and a major general by 2024, has just been appointed the new commander-in-chief of the armed forces of Ukraine, appointed by Zelensky to replace Oleksandr Syrsky. Before the commander's replacement, Drapatyev held the post of commander of the joint forces of the Ukrainian armed forces, overseeing a large Ukrainian army group in key combat areas. Zelensky himself presented the personnel reshuffle as the latest stage in a reset of the military leadership and a response to criticism within Ukraine, where several days of, and you've put obviously staged, protests demanding a change in command had been taking place. Mykhailo Drapachev, callsign Rubin, is a Ukrainian army officer who at the time of his new appointment held the rank of Major General and was considered a representative of the middle generation of commanders. He is 43 years old, making him significantly younger than many senior military leaders who emerged in the late Soviet and early post-Soviet periods. Since June 2025, Drapatyev has led the joint forces of the Ukrainian armed forces, managing large formations and coordinating actions in specific sectors of the front. Ukrainian media emphasize his experience of direct participation in combat operations, but the details of his service biography, including the early stages of his career, are greatly limited. Now, it says he's only 43 years old. That does seem rather young to be in charge of all the military forces. But as you also point out here, Matt, there really isn't much left of the Ukrainian forces. Of course, it is also interesting that there are huge gaps in his career in the official biography. So what is so important about this person, Matt? Why are we discussing this today?
Well, we'll be talking about those gaps, and hopefully we'll fill them. I don't know if anyone else in English is doing it. I like that his call sign is Reuben. That made me smile. He was the preferred candidate of the British. He actually even went through a ceremony where they kind of dubbed him, you know, their man. He has political aspirations. You see, obviously, he's a young guy. But to be a general by 2024, he was born in 82. That's a little suspicious, and his record is not a good one. But what difference does it make at this point? Ukraine is being held together by mercenaries. And, you know, you can't trust anything that the American press is talking about it. You have to go to the Russian press, I've gone, so even the Arabic press, for the truth about this kind of thing. I even go to military, forums. I've been doing that for a long time to get general opinions here. He is politically reliable, let's put it that way. But he is also going to end up being the fall guy because there is nothing left. And Donald Trump has moved his attention. He wants to move his attention, of course, strictly to Israel and then later to Taiwan. So he's going to take the fall for all of this when everything falls apart completely. And I say obviously staged. You know, they've lost 2 million men. They have no economy. They're entirely dependent on foreign aid. And that's what they're going to protest. They claim, the Ukrainian press claimed that they were chanting his name, Dropotny, Dropotny, Dropotny. I don't even know how would they even know him? And keep in mind too, Zelensky's presidential powers ran out 2 years ago. You know, I saw the phrase commander in chief. We use the commander in chief in America to refer to the president. And I think what this man should do is to take over the government and say no more, no more slaughter, no more destruction. And if he's able to do that with a military coup, he will be the most popular man maybe in modern Ukrainian history.
Well, I'm not sure he's the sort of person to do something like that. I mean, the image that we've got to go with this podcast, it shows Macron pointing the finger of where he wants Dropotny to go. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that he would actually rise up against Zelensky. I mean, this is the reason why they've actually taken him on, isn't it?
I know. I could dream, though.
Well, when Mariupol rose up against the new Kiev state in 2014... and residents barricaded the streets to prevent the Ukrainian army from entering the city, a battalion under Dropotny's command, riding in an infantry fighting vehicle, broke through the barricades. According to all accounts, the armored vehicles crushed civilians in its path, and these images were captured on video, becoming one of the symbols of Kiev's incompetence. In 2014, Mariupol residents protested the violent change of power in Kiev after Maidan. Dropotny participated in the repression and torture of city residents, and hundreds of people either disappeared or were executed during the resulting punitive actions. Of course, that's something that we're just not told about in the West, particularly in Britain. I mean, the only time I've ever heard about what was happening in Mariupol is looking at the alternative media. This happened straight after the Maidan protests, which they in the West, they were claiming, oh, this was all of Ukraine. Well, not in Mariupol. They protested against this, and this was the response of protesting against this. this violent repression, being run over by tanks, effectively. Russia's investigative committee later charged him in absentia with organising the artillery shelling of populated areas in Donbass from 2017 to 2019, which, according to their data, killed 154 civilians. Information about these episodes is currently being covered up in Ukrainian media and official biographies of Drapetier. Nevertheless, it is impossible to completely conceal the traces of his involvement in previous operations. Drapetier fought in Donbass as early as August 2014, coming under heavy fire while surrounded but escaping alive. In 2022, he participated in combat operations near Kryvyi Rih, as well as in the Dnepropetrovsk and Kherson regions, where he earned a reputation as a tough commander, earning the nickname the Kherson Sadist. In 2023, he commanded forces along the Dnieper River after Russian troops withdrew from the Kherson area. In May 2024, he attempted to halt the Russian advance near Vovchansk, becoming one of the key commanders there. In 2025, Drapetier was transferred to Kupiansk, where he led the Kortytsia task force, attempting first to prevent the city's capture and then to dislodge the Russians from their positions. Over the course of several months, his strategy led to the loss of at least tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers and Latin American mercenaries in unsuccessful mechanized attacks, after which his force was withdrawn from the area, along with the remaining combat-ready personnel. His sadist image derives from his willingness to tolerate high losses to achieve his goals. That same year, 2025, Drapetier attempted to resign entirely following a high-profile scandal. The reason for this was allegations of the deaths of approximately 150 to 200 soldiers stationed at a training ground near the front. The entire camp came under attack from Iskander cluster munitions, destroying it entirely. Following this, Drapetier submitted his resignation, which Zelensky initially formally accepted. I believe you want to give us some more details on this, Matt, actually, on what actually happened there at this camp where they came under a cap, under attack. Because they weren't just attacked once, were they? I guess this is one of the things that they're trying to cover up. Do you want to give us some more details on that?
Yes. The main thing that they try to promote is his breakout way back in, 2014. But he's known for one thing. He's known for his willingness to sacrifice huge numbers of his own men to achieve his goals. But he is an unpopular man. I did a paper on desertion, and his name came up. The Economist of London even won't cover for him anymore. That the Ukrainian military was in such a bad state that his orders simply weren't being obeyed. I think he said something like, Ukraine's military is disadvantaged by a command culture that is unwilling to accept personal responsibility for and learn from battlefield failures. That's my translation of that. The training ground thing. And this is why he tried to resign. And then that was, he was promoted rather than it was accepted. And then he was brought back and resigned. That training ground was destroyed, Unit 239, and it led to the deaths of a few Ukrainian soldiers. He went back and used it again, and so it was hit again. And it was such a stupid thing to do. And he tried to shift the blame and all this kind of thing. He was relieved of command for at least a short time. And so his taking over is probably a negative thing, which is why I think that the so-called demonstrations were staged, because they were allegedly chanting his name, which of course is nonsense. But the Ukrainian media is so tightly controlled. Remember, the U.S. calls this a democracy. So tightly controlled that the only thing they really talk about is his breakout. back in, 2014, which is really luck more than anything else. So that was the closest training ground. He just didn't care. It was the closest one. He didn't want to go anywhere else. And then the Russians said, is this guy serious? And they hit him again. It's just absolutely, and that's what sort of a man he is. And also because of his youth, he doesn't learn from his mistakes, even though he talks about it. He's way too young to be a major general at this point.
So he took his novice crew, who basically hadn't had any military experience, and he took them to a training ground where they were then fired upon by the Russians and 100 or so of them died. And then he went back to the same training ground and did the same thing again. And then we're expected to believe that the Ukrainians are protesting that they actually want this man to lead the entire army after making a mistake like that. It's a bit ridiculous, isn't it, to expect those protests to be true after he does something like that. And are they covering that up as well? Is that one of the things that they're covering up? Is that that happened? Are they covering that up from the West? Because obviously they wouldn't be able to cover that up from the Ukrainians, would they?
Well, yeah, I mean, at least the Ukrainian military is well aware of it. But again, the media is very, very tightly controlled. But as far as the Western world, that I don't know. I've read a few articles so far on English language sources. They haven't mentioned it. But yeah, it's probably going to come out. And the very fact that he was in command of the unit that was doing some of the shelling in civilian areas in Donetsk, he is a war criminal. And you're right. He does what he's told. He will sacrifice whatever he needs to sacrifice in terms of manpower to get what he wants. And but at least he had the guts, the self-awareness to resign June 1st, 2025. But, typical, not only was that not accepted of it, he was brought back, he was promoted. And now he is the commander-in-chief of the Ukrainian military.
Well, there is an argument that some people might make, and they might say, well, that's the sort of person you want, is you have to win the war at all costs. So it doesn't matter that he might lose a lot of his men if at the end of it, he wins the war, because they're in the war to win it, and the faster they win it, the better. And if that means that you end up losing a lot of people, then so be it. And that is an argument that people will make. I mean, that was the argument that was made in the Second World War for the terror bombing of the civilians. Well, what about this massive loss of life? Yes, but we'll win the war, and then the war will be over. And unless we just think, oh, well, that was just the English that were doing that. I can remember Hitler writing about how he wasn't happy about the truce that they had in the First World War when they were playing football, because he said, look, this is a war. We need to get it over with as quickly as possible. We shouldn't be having a truce and playing football. What is this? This needs to be won as quickly as possible. That's the point of the war. So there is an argument to be made that because he doesn't show this concern for his men's lives, that might indeed, in the eyes of some people, that might make him a better pick. Indeed, that might be the reason one of the reasons why Zelensky picked him. Well, Ukrainian and Western media describe his appointment as an attempt to renew the army's leadership amidst protracted fighting and a mixed assessment of the previous commander. Kiev's rhetoric emphasizes responsibility and readiness to reform the Ukrainian Armed Forces command system, to which Dropatier himself has already responded, calling his appointment one of absolute responsibility. The change of commander is presented as a response to public pressure within Ukraine and Zelensky's attempt to demonstrate that the government is listening to criticism and seeking new approaches to combat operations. Meanwhile, in the Ukrainian media, biographical details of the new commander often give way to discussion of his supposed role in consolidating the military leadership and interacting with Western partners. Now, I'm surprised it doesn't make more out of the interaction with Western partners, but as I say, because the image that accompanies this article shows you Macron pointing in one direction and Dripathi following that direction. Do you know any more about his interactions with West and Western politicians, Matt? Do you know more about it than what's in this article here? Because there's very little about it apart from just saying, well, he interacts with Western partners.
Yeah, he, as I mentioned, he is the favorite of the British military. What's left of that? You know, they keep talking about NATO continuing this war, even if Trump pulls out. Even though NATO is the ultimate definition of a paper tiger. I just want to point out that Russia is the premier military force in the world. It is a machine. It's whatever problems there were in the beginning of the war, all that's been ironed out. The command structure is as close to perfect as you're going to get it. They're battle hardened. Anyone who wants to take them on, we talked about the Poles last time. What a disaster that would be for green soldiers to go up against green, meaning inexperienced soldiers go up against experienced Russian infantry. It would be a slaughter. And this has been the true tragedy here. But, you know, he is aware of the mass desertion. There was the Anna Kievska Brigade, which he was put in charge of, the 155th, never even reached the front because of mass desertion. And it didn't reach the front because he was put in charge of it. And he said, well, they have a lack of motivation, systemic shortcomings, all this nonsense. He doesn't know how to manage troops. He's too young for this. He lost control over everything. His own staff is always being reshuffled. That doesn't speak anything of trust, but of instability and the inability to consolidate his mind in one direction. Three ground forces have changed in a year. Commanders have changed in a year. And Dripathi, I guess, it looks like his appointment is a desperate attempt to plug holes rather than to recognize any merits that he might have. But he definitely is. Now, I don't know his language skills. I assume he speaks English. He's very Western centered. But if he's going to be the way that, you know, if he's just not going to care about the deaths of his own men. I mean, that's the very definition of defeat, is when your own men either desert or are killed in huge numbers. The only option that they've had since April of 2022 is just to end this war. All that Russia wants is the Russian-speaking parts of eastern Ukraine. Let the place be demilitarized. It's just unbelievable. It's, you know, so... but he also might have political aspirations. We're not sure. The very fact that he was almost knighted, dubbed, by the British, high command suggests that, you know, they do want to promote this guy no matter what. I love how they say, you know, it's going to, renew the army's leadership. Well, that's exactly what it is. How is that an interpretation of anything? Readiness to reform. Reform what? There's nothing left. They've lost 2 million men. Everything that they have, equipment-wise, has been vaporized. Absolute responsibility, really? Well, if that were the case, he would hand himself over to the Russians and stand trial for attacking civilian areas, if that were true. Ukrainian media is... Ukrainian media has been very terse about him, claiming that he is the most popular guy. He's not a bad looking guy. He's a young guy. You know, he looks like he can be very charismatic. I don't think he is. But his rhetoric and his policies have nothing to do with each other.
When you say that he probably speaks English. This is one of the reasons why the British like him. Zelensky didn't originally speak English. And then shortly after this operation began in Ukraine, suddenly he was able to speak English. You know, we had this sort of stilted English for him. And I noticed before when we had Petro Poroshenko, and he was visiting America, he was speaking in English. And it's not very often that you hear people that aren't English speakers, politicians and diplomats, speak in English. Normally they will have an interpreter. I mean, you never heard Angela Merkel speak in English. You never heard Putin speaking in English. But these Ukrainian presidents all want to speak in English for some reason. I guess it's because they want to join the EU. And I think English is the chosen language of the European Union, even though Britain is no longer a part of it. And that's because English is the language of commerce, basically, not necessarily because of England itself. The change of the top commander position does not fundamentally change the nature of the conflict. It is a reshuffle within the Ukrainian military leadership, while Kiev's course of continuing the confrontation and relying on Western military assistance remains unchanged. The new commander is already listed in the Russian Ministry of Internal Affairs database as a wanted man due to his participation in military operations against Russia and against the residents of Donbass. Personnel decisions in Kiev don't resolve key issues, from the Ukrainian army's combat readiness to its dependence on arms supplies and financial support from NATO and the European Union. Against this backdrop, the change of the top commander is perceived more as part of Zelensky's domestic political game and an attempt to redistribute responsibility for events at the front than something that actually matters. The appointment of Djapaty suggests a further strengthening of the role of the middle generation of Ukrainian commanders in military command, but does not eliminate Kiev's strategic dependence on external support. Judging by Ukrainian statements, the new commander is expected not only to continue combat operations in current areas, but also to adapt the army to a protracted conflict, including reforming the command structure and interaction with Western military advisors. So they're saying there that Ukraine is getting ready for this war to basically just continue a protracted conflict. I mean, in what way is that? Do their would their strategy then change, do you think, Matt, from a immediate war with Russia to a protracted conflict? What changes would there be, do you think?
Well, this has been a war of attrition, as we know. Their main suppliers don't want anything to do with it anymore. I was just before we came on, I was reading a Ukrainian article saying that this man is inheriting an army that's on the attack, which of course is simply not true. And we've said on this program, I've said it when you were away, that the Jewish leaders of this, there's only a handful, this Jewish clique in Kiev that run the country. They live in their own bubble. They have no conception of reality whatsoever. Zeluzhny and Chersky and these other guys, they told Zelensky what he wanted to hear. And because he is a drug addict, and I'm not making fun of him for that, but every once in a while, he would just have an outburst of anger. He would say, I want you to take this village. And they would go, okay, we have no resources to take that village. Well, take it anyway. He has no conception. He's never been in the army. He doesn't know anything about battlefield, military policy, not even as a political scientist, like I do. I mean, he doesn't even know it that way. It is just completely, he lives in his own world, and that's being supported by the West to some extent. That's also falling apart. If he were to ever be captured, he's in a lot of trouble. This is the case with a lot of Ukrainian commanders. What they've done in Russian-speaking areas. Now this is the second time we've heard middle generation of Ukrainian command. I don't know what middle generation means. It means, they had nothing to do with the Soviet Union. I think, is that. It's just a media slogan they say over and over again. I guarantee you the Wall Street Journal is going to be using it. The New York Times is going to be using it. But it's that, you know, guys who are rushed through promotions precisely because they will do what they're told and they weren't trained, have no connection with the USSR and those methods. He is 100% NATO. So, and that's why he's a favorite of both the British and to a lesser extent the French. But if Donald Trump is pulling out of this, and, you know, it's just the slaughter has been so outrageous. I don't know how any normal human being can do this. I mean, this is a man who supported we know how they do the draft there, you know. Oh, and by the way, they have lifted the ban on drafting people with amputated limbs. I read yesterday, actually on the very same site. They don't care who it is at this point. They'll grab anybody and throw them to the front lines. And he defends this. And he thinks that this is something that we have to do, which would make him extremely unpopular locally. This war is extremely unpopular. This war doesn't make any sense. And when the West gets wind of who he is, I'm very anxious to see how they treat him. So far, they've been very brief articles, but if there's anything else, you know, they might be more nervous about promoting him. Let me put it that way.
Well, moving on to our next quote here, and this comes from Ukrainer.ru, which it reminds me of BBC Persia coming from London, Ukraine.ru coming from Moscow. Well, near midnight on Monday, July 21st, Volodymyr Zelensky announced the resignation of Ukrainian Armed Forces Commander-in-Chief Oleksandr Syrsky and the appointment of Mykhailo Dropatye in his place. This was reported on July 21st by the Telegram channel Ukrainer.ru. Who is this man? The Ukrainian army will be led by a general with an illustrious record of war crimes, purges, and devastating frontline failures. His debut was in Mariupol, where he earned his bloody fame back on May 9, 2014. Back then, he commanded the 2nd Battalion of the 72nd Brigade, which rammed barricades and crushed civilians in Mariupol with armoured vehicles. He was part of the shelling of Donbass as brigade commander of the 58th Brigade of the Ukrainian Army. There he gave orders to conduct targeted fire from heavy artillery on residential areas of the DPR. He was defeated in the strangely named town of New York. Dropatye managed to maneuver his forces against Kharkov and Luhansk, becoming the main architect of the disaster, where his units miserably failed their defence and suffered huge losses. And I think we'll just stop there, Matt. Have you got an explanation of why we've got a town that's named New York in the Donbass region?
I found that very, you know, this is not the first time I've mentioned it. It's, you know, Jork, J-O-R-K, German colony founded in 1892. But it also derives from when Catherine the Great invited the Mennonites over. It's on the right bank of the very polluted Gravois-Tourette River. It's named after the town of York in Saxony. And it was renamed Novgorodtsy by the Supreme Soviet of Ukraine in 1951. But then in 2021, they turned it back again. So the colony founders were Mennonites, invited to Russia by Catherine, with a 30-year tax exemption. But during the Soviet era, before 1931, the Mennonites were deported to the Amur region, or the far, far, far east, where they established a settlement also called New York. So there's no connection with New York City or New York State in the U.S. It's York, you know, with a J, apparently where they were from initially. And this has come up maybe three times before, and I had to go search for the proper explanation, because people mention it and then they just go on. You know, yeah. Oh, they're shelling here in Mariupol and New York, and no explanation. So that's where this comes from. It's named after a town in York is a town in Saxony, J-O-R-K.
So they don't have lots of Jews there then, just Ukrainians.
Well, the Mennonites, you know, that's a good question. They were a fairly wealthy town by the time of the revolution. There was quite a bit of industry. So I do believe that there were some. You know, the Mennonite connection with the Jews is I think, fairly well known. But it's nothing too extraordinary. And of course, you know, Stalin had removed them. And when they were sent to the Far East, there's another town of New York over in the Far East today. It's probably like we would call unincorporated. So there's two towns with that name, and they refused to, Novgorodche was a communist name, but they liked this Saxony, this reference to New York, and they changed it back just a few years ago.
I always instantly think of lots of Jews when I think of New York, because it's so linked with Jews, isn't it?
As you should.
Getting back to our notes here, in early 2025, the general fiercely defended the manhunters at the military commissariats, that is, those grabbing men off the streets for the draft. He called the retaliatory attacks on military commissariats by desperate Ukrainians a red line and an outrage, calling on the Bankovia administration, and Bankovia is the name of the street on which the offices of the president can be found, kind of like Downing Street, number 10 Downing Street. You've got Bankovia administration to carry out harsh reprisals against its own population. However, Bankovia doesn't squander loyal personnel. Instead of bringing him to a court-martial for his massive losses and desertions, they simply transferred him to command of the joint forces. The bottom line is, he's an ideal candidate for the Kiev regime. He knows how to shell civilians, covers up the abuses of military commissars, and pays for his bloody mistakes only by being promoted to a new position. Is this what they call them then now? The manhunters, the kidnappers? I mean, that's what's going on there. They just kidnap all the young males, all the males, effectively. They just kidnap them and send them to the front. Is there anything similar going on in Russia, do you know, Matt? Do they have forced conscription in Russia, or is it just in Ukraine that this sort of thing goes on?
No. There's a lot of volunteers in Russia. There's simply no need for this. Russia's using maybe, 15% of its military power against Ukraine. It's because it's defending Russian territories or Russian speaking. Remember, Luhansk and Donetsk, they're part of Russia now. I was the first one to translate their Declaration of Independence and Constitution into English way back when, late 2013. And now they are a part of Russia. They're part of the Russian Federation, which is a great thing for them economically. So quite the contrary, the war is not an unpopular one. Russian casualties have not been incredibly high, especially when compared to Ukraine, partially because Russia is dependent very much on its, what they call fire pockets. The use of massed artillery, whether shells or missiles. And when you don't have a trained personnel at the front, which Ukraine does not have, it's just like shooting fish in a barrel. It's a shame. But the point they're trying to make here is that those who were the manhunters, which I guess was the best translation I can come up with, there were people who were attacking them. And he says, "Oh, you can't go after them. We need this kind of thing." Apparently, they're they're drafting women and women who are pregnant, and they just don't care at this point. And he supports all of that. I think largely it's because, and I love the line, you know, this is not my writing. This is their writing. He's an ideal candidate for the Kiev regime. He knows how to shell civilians, cover up abuses, and plays for his bloody mistakes only by being promoted, to a new position. That's absolutely true. With a president who has no clue what war is, and whose presidential powers ran out 2 years ago, who has no legitimacy whatsoever. He's less popular than Yeltsin in 96. You know, he simply doesn't, Dropotny just simply doesn't have the experience. He doesn't have the mentality to do much of anything. So that French committee, I remember reading about this, the French trained brigade, that was very, you know, very fast training, deserted immediately on the way to Ukraine. That's how you know, little he has any command over his men. On the way to Ukraine, they left. Who knows where they are now? And that's happened many times before. This the 155th is just the one big example. And mass desertion has been normal for the Ukrainian military since this started. I was the first to mention that in great detail. Now to the point where you have people who are offering, they call, you know, the golden ticket. You know, give me 10,000 American dollars and I'll teach you how to get out of here. Because who wants to fight for these people? Who wants to fight this war? Well, you know you're going to be killed. There's no chance of you winning. So what are you fighting for? And I think right now they're reliant mostly on mercenaries, and NATO isn't going to do a damn thing. NATO has no capacity in that regard. Yeah, running over civilians, that's about right. That's about right for them. You know, and as I say in my book on the Ukraine war, you know, there's nothing about me that's anti-Ukrainian whatsoever. Nothing. Nothing. But this so-called administration has zero legitimacy. Most of it's not Ukrainian at all. And is creating a situation where Ukraine is being totally depopulated. And Dropotny now is going to be presiding over that depopulation even more, with no chance of winning whatsoever. It's been one of the greatest tragedies of our era. And you have Orthodox boys being killed in huge numbers, and even girls, I guess, to some extent. And, you know, it's just been, this is a mass slaughter. Everyone over there needs to pay.
So what you're saying is they're more at risk, actually, from the Ukrainian commissariat who will come and kidnap them off the street than they are actually at risk of being shelled by Russia. And as far as their women are concerned, I mean, right since the beginning, Ukraine has used them in a lot of propaganda, showing that they've got these women fighting for them. Does Russia have any female troops at all? I can't recall ever seeing any. It seems pretty uncivilized to me. Sending women to the front. Do you know if Russia has female troops, or is it just Ukraine?
No, it's just Ukraine, and that done out of desperation. I could only imagine. I don't know if they even have mixed units or not. In Russia, you know, females are excellent at, you know, espionage, computer science, and you know, nursing, that kind of thing. Some military police to deal with women who they need to deal with. And that's about it. They have plenty of men. And that's the thing. You know, the Russian troops over there are always being rotated. They're always rested. They're in great shape. And I can't imagine that they want to just kill these untrained guys. And yet, you know, they do have a rifle in their hand. They got it from somewhere. And the crap that the West has been giving them in terms of equipment. Again, in my book on the Ukraine war, which you can get on the Radio Albion site, by the way, I go in through the equipment problems that they've had. and the German and Swedish engineered tanks and APCs are not very good. German engineering has fallen off entirely with the Leopard 2 tanks and everything else. They're just being slaughtered there, and it's really hard to read. And the worst is the Air Force. They can't get off the ground before they're destroyed. And the F-16s. They think sending F-16s is going to be a great thing. These guys have been trained only in the simulator. They get sent out there. God knows what they're told. They take off. They're 3 feet off the ground, and boom. Russian S-400 unit destroys them. They have a 100% kill rate. It's just these are the best men that Ukraine has. To be a fighter pilot, you have to be fairly extraordinary. And it's very sad. And this has been going on for so long. And when the hackers got into the army site and discovered that it's about 2 million killed in action, I figured, yeah, that's about right. That's about right. So if it wasn't for mercenaries and the West, this war would have ended in July of 22.
So what was this hacking thing then, Matt? I'm not aware of that. Was that somebody hacked into Ukraine's military statistics?
Yeah, it must have been before you got out. But yeah, they admit that there's 2 million dead since the war began. And it was a group of hackers. And it's funny how the Ukrainian leadership never denied it. But they broke into the mainframe of the military commissariat, and that was it. And I thought it was funny that the state didn't deny it. They just condemned it. So 2 million, I said that 8 months ago? So it's much higher now. And it's just a shame. These are some of the best boys in Europe being slaughtered for no reason. For a Jewish state in Kiev, a handful of them. And it makes me nauseous. It truly does.
Well, I think the only way it can be stopped is if they pull the plug on the funding, isn't it? Really, it's down to Donald Trump to stop sending the money, stop sending the weapons. And you could say, Britain and France might still send them money and weapons, but not enough, I think, to take on Russia. I think the majority of it is going to be coming from America and NATO. And that's really the only way that this is going to be stopped is if the West stops funneling weapons in there. And to be honest, Putin has shown a lot of restraint in not attacking Western countries for doing that, because we're the ones responsible for the weapons that are killing the Russian men. I just hope that eventually it will stop. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.